The Nintendo Switch 2 will be able to be pre-ordered in the US this week, but some of the prices jumped. Plus, the first major board game producer has suspended operations due to the tariffs. Tonight is April 20th, 2025, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is everyone, Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Thank you, Skype. That's in the intro. Nobody's going to understand that reference in like a year, right? Is that how it is? Hello, everybody, and welcome to a not PLE, whatever that means, edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, where we have a hype train going on right now, thank you so much, everybody, for your generosity. Thank you so much for being here. We do try to tape this show live each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. However, I will not be here next Sunday. So next week, I will not be here. Orange Lounge Radio will still be here. So go ahead and get a be here at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific for Orange Lounge Radio. They will still be here no matter what else is going on television. And people in chat also don't know what a PLE is, and I'm sure that there are other people in chat who know exactly what a PLE is. It is a new acronym for something that other people watch that I don't. So you can answer that in chat, or you could look it up and see if Gemini gives you the right answer. I don't know. It might not. Who knows? Anyway, but this is a podcast, so you can join us throughout the week on Discord, vognetwork.com/Discord. Post things that you may want me to talk about on the show or react to anything that we have we've talked about here, or just continue bemoaning that prices are going up and our wages are not, because that's one of the things that that can unite us all right now in this time. I hope things that get better. Anyway. Let's go ahead and get into the news. We've been talking about this. This has been basically the big story all month. The Nintendo Switch 2, it was unveiled earlier. Mario Kart World had their direct presentation. It didn't sell that many people on the $80 price tag, but it's there. So we now know more about Mario Kart World, and it's all going to be coming out on June 5th. And U.S. pre-orders were paused because of the economic uncertainty over the tariffs. On again, off again. Are they there? Are they not there? Now, Nintendo is going to be reopening, or actually opening for the first time, pre-orders in the U.S. for Thursday. So we're going to be able to finally get them. We were supposed to be able to pre-order them a couple weeks ago, but now it's going to be this coming Thursday. Game Developer reports that Nintendo has announced that it's planning to reopen North American pre-orders for the Nintendo Switch 2 on April 24th, which is Thursday. And the device will still hit store shelves with its original $449.99 price point, which means that the console itself will not be affected by the tariffs imposed by the administration of President Donald Trump, at least for the time being. But Nintendo has not entirely dodged the tariff fireball. So accessories for the Nintendo Switch 2 will experience price adjustment. That is Nintendo's words, experience a price adjustment, with some now costing more than their initial prices that were released on April 2nd after the Nintendo Direct. Nintendo had originally planned to open the pre-orders for the console on April 9th, but delayed because the tariffs actually were announced about 30 minutes after Nintendo announced the prices for everything. And it changed a lot of things because nobody expected them... nobody expected the tariffs to be like this. Even people who were close to the administration did not expect this. So the price adjustments amount to roughly 5-6% price increase for devices like the Nintendo Switch 2 Pro controllers, Joy-Con 2 combos, the carrying case, the dock, and stuff like that. So the biggest price increases are to the dock and the camera, the official camera. The price of a Switch 2 dock is climbing about 9% from $109.99 to $119.99, and the camera is jumping 10% in price from $49.99 to $54.99. So in terms of the camera, Nintendo did actually confirm USB-C support for third-party cameras, which might, you know, which the thing is, people who make USB-C webcams are probably also going to have to adjust their price because of the same tariffs. So the Trump administration paused the majority of the tariffs on April 9th. We talked about that last week, but it only lasts 90 days, and it did not exempt the 145% tariff on goods manufactured in China. So I believe the 90-day stay, I believe that's until July 8th. That's the math that I did, but I don't know when that 90-day stay started. Like, I don't know what day they started from, but it's around the first week of July. So things change every day. So originally, or like on April 11th, key electronic devices like smartphones and monitors received exemptions, but not video game consoles. But on April 13th, the administration was like, no, they're not exempted. They're just moved to another category. They're still being tariffed. If you're wondering what the tariffs are that would impact Nintendo starting on July 8th. So they produce the consoles now in Vietnam. They moved production to Vietnam. Vietnam, as a country, provided infrastructure. They invested in their local infrastructure to have the ability for them to be able to start producing their electronic consoles in Vietnam. It takes a while to do that. It takes money and it takes time. And Nintendo didn't have to build those factories. Vietnam did, and then invited Nintendo in when a lot of this trade war was happening with China the first time. So it's 46% on Vietnam. Cambodia has a 49% tariff coming in. So almost 50% of the price of something. So that would mean that, you know, if for a $100 item, $46 would have to be paid to the United States government to import it into the country if it came from Vietnam. $49 would have to be paid by the importer to the U.S. government for things coming in from Cambodia. Instead, for the next 90 days, it went from 0%, which was what they had before, to 10%. So for something that is $50, and a lot of these are actually assembled in Vietnam. That's why I'm kind of using the full price, because if you import the raw materials and assemble it here, you can knock this price down a little bit because the raw materials are cheaper than the assembled product. But if the product is assembled and boxed and packaged overseas and just brought over as is, then it's essentially the full price. That's the way that I understand it. But it's 10%. So something that is $50, you would have to pay $5 to the American government. That was not paused. So we don't know what's going to happen on July 8th. And Nintendo, unfortunately, needs to guess. And all of these companies that are trying to import things, they need to guess what is going to happen in July and how can I not go out of business. And so what Nintendo did is they're taking a risk on the console by not upping its price. But what they've done to kind of buffer is they did up the price of the accessories. So here's the accessories and what their old price to new price was. So the Nintendo Switch 2 Pro controller was announced on April 2nd to be $80. It's now $85. The Joy-Con 2 controllers went from $90 to $95. The Joy-Con 2 charging grip went from $35 to $40. The Joy-Con 2 straps went from $13 to $14. The Joy-Con 2 wheel, which has a set of two wheels, went from $20 to $25. The camera, which this says went from $50 to $55. I'm pulling from different things here. So that is still right. $50 to $55. So that's the camera, the official camera. The dock set, which includes the Nintendo Switch 2 dock, AC adapter, USB-C cable, and ultra-high-speed HDMI cable, went from $110 to $120. So that jumped $10. The Nintendo Switch 2 carry case and screen protector went from $34 to $40. So that may be coming from China. I don't know, because that's a higher than a 10% jump. The all-in-one carry case went from $79 to $85, and the AC adapter, the special Nintendo-branded AC adapter, which is a USB-C cable, but it has specific voltages, went from $29 to $35. So Dark Tetsuya does point out in our chat, the good news, the only good news in this situation is that Nintendo is saying the Switch 1 stuff is still compatible. Yes. So you can use your Nintendo Switch 1 Pro Controller on a Switch 2. You won't have the C button, and you won't be able to plug in a headset if you wanted to for game chat if you don't have a, you know, if your console is not near you. But the Switch, the Nintendo Switch Pro Controller absolutely works. And, you know, it's, you'll have the HD 1 Rumble. You won't have the new Rumble, but it still works. You'll be able to play the games. You'll be able to use Joy-Con 1 on the Switch 2. You won't be able to get the mouse functionality if you're going to use that. And you won't be able to use it on the side of the system. You won't be able to put them in on and in, actually connect them to the Switch 2. You'd have to have a separate dock for them, but those are around. You don't need all of the accessories. These are optional things. And I think this is pretty much, this is the risk that Nintendo is taking, is that hoping that these up to 50% tariffs on all of their imports doesn't go through in July. But if they do, they won't have to raise prices too much. Right? It really sucks. It sucks for everybody involved. I know that even though I know Nintendo is a large corporation and corporations are evil and capitalism is not that great, I know there is, I don't think there's anybody at Nintendo that's happy about this. I don't think any millionaire executive, which there are millionaire executives at Nintendo, I don't think they're happy about this. And I know that's going to be probably hard for some people to accept. Because they're not going to make as much money because of this. There are going to be people that are not going to buy things that maybe they would have. And that is actually one of the goal of tariffs, is to have American consumers choose American goods. Nintendo is a Japanese company. It is ultimately a Japanese product. And the goal of tariffs is to stop Americans from buying products from Japan, products from China, products from Europe. They want you to buy American products, and they want all the American companies to move their manufacturing and invest in manufacturing in America. America's not going to invest in the manufacturing like Vietnam did. America wants the companies to invest in bringing manufacturing back to America. And in 7 to 10 years, America will be able to manufacture all the things we used to buy from other countries in 2024. That is the ultimate goal. If the sky-high tariffs go into effect in 90 days, Nintendo's price increases might not be enough to combat the fees charged for each device entering the country. If the company is racing to get ahead of the tariffs, it might be spending this time racing to get more consoles from its manufacturing hubs in Vietnam and China and Cambodia into the United States. This means that Switch 2 and physical versions of games could still be set for a price increase. As the company stated in its announcement, quote, other adjustments to the price of any Nintendo product are also possible in the future, depending on market conditions, unquote. And yeah, so I think I've even read something that people are expecting the PlayStation 5's price to go up because it's also manufactured out in China. And there's, while there's a lot of PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 5 Pro stock already in America, the tariffs only apply to ships that arrive in dock. If they've already been arrived and they've already been gotten, there's no retroactive. They're not putting retroactive tariffs on things that have already come across the border. But if they need to restock, then they've got to look at what are they going to call, you know, how are they going to raise the price and what are they going to raise the price to? And I believe the Xbox, I believe those are built in Mexico. I don't know if the actual Xbox console are built in China or not. I don't actually know. I know Xbox discs. I know the DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff. I know those. There's a lot of infrastructure in Mexico for that, which is only a 25% tariff. So it's still a good amount, but it's not the 50%. But you know, Xbox is going to have to think about the same thing, but also Xboxes aren't exactly flying off the shelf. So they're probably sitting back saying, let's just keep our current inventory as is. And to be fair, these are niche products. So a lot of people don't really care. Like, there are still people out there who believe that we shouldn't be playing video games. That, you know, maybe we should be, you know, yearning for the mines. Right? As Jeremy Matt even asks, if you ask the other side, they'll say you should be playing video games anyway. You should be working and screwing iPhone screws in. And there's a lot of talk about how, like, an E3VL even says, you know, American CEO can't pay slave labor prices to U.S. citizens. And I hear this a lot. While there are absolutely a lot of human rights issues in certain factories overseas, there are also a lot of factories that don't have them. And I know that there's a lot of smaller creators that I've talked to have traveled to China and have actually, like, looked at the facilities that are building their products, their electronic products and stuff. And they have been able to see that, yeah, no, people actually like working there. Now, like, sure, Foxconn, yeah, there's issues at Foxconn, which a lot of people use, you know, and that's why they've had a lot of incidents that finally got reported, and a lot of them don't. But not every factory, just because it's overseas, doesn't mean they're paying terrible wages. It doesn't mean they're treating them poorly. Not every place is like that. We just overemphasize the ones that are bad, because they do exist. But if the cost of living isn't as high, then the wages don't need to be as high. They may actually have more disposable income than you do. Because even though they make less, but they also spend less. And it's hard for people to grasp that. So just because it's overseas doesn't mean that it's being made by people who are indentured servants or treated poorly. While that does happen, it's actually not even the majority. It happens. It happens more than it should. It absolutely happens more than it should. But it's not all the time, and it's not everywhere. And there are a lot of people who do like their job, and they believe that they are compensated fairly, and they have a very stable home life. They're able to have discretionary income, and there's a lot of that. Just because they would be, you know, below the poverty line in the U.S. doesn't mean they're anywhere near the poverty line in their country. And remember, there's a lot of raw materials that you just can't get here. They just don't exist here. I was reading something today, is that if you like coffee, by the way, the only place in America that can actually grow coffee is Hawaii. That is the only place in America that is far enough south to grow coffee. We have to import coffee from elsewhere because it literally does not grow here. Questbuster backs up what Bobby is saying. The cost of living in China is nowhere like ours. When I visited China a few years ago, I was able to buy a lot of food at a fraction of what it would cost me here. Europe as well. Europe is the same way, and it's been like that for a long time. S. Sharon Matt also says Hawaii obviously doesn't have enough land to make all of our coffee. So we can't, like, we literally cannot bring coffee production to the United States. It is physically impossible. But somehow, we're supposed to move coffee production into the U.S. because Americans should only buy American coffee. Now, if you are not a drinker, which I do, but I don't, a lot of liquors and liqueurs and things like that, a lot of that comes from elsewhere. And there's a lot of good stuff that comes from elsewhere. And those are absolutely going to be tariffed, and you can't make those here. And so if you do drink cocktails or even mocktails or something like that, you're going to find that you're going to have a less selection because it's going to be way too expensive. And that's coming because they want everything you eat and drink, they want it to be completely in America. And if not, you're going to have to pay a premium, and the U.S. government is going to take a lot of that stuff. Pod Culture says the tariffs are hitting Kentucky and Tennessee pretty hard because they're big whiskey areas. That's also because of the reciprocal stuff. So what's going on a lot of places are like, okay, well, if you're going to tariff our stuff, we'll also tariff yours. And I believe it's Jim Beam, which is one of the Kentucky distilleries. They're Tennessee or Kentucky. They're in that area. They have had Canada just pulled all their stuff off the store shelves, and they've lost a lot of business because Canada was actually their biggest customer. Like Canadian places, they sold more in Canada than they did in the U.S. And they just all like, nope. Canada's like, nope, we're not going to buy it anymore. And Canadians are like, no, we'll buy whiskey that's from here, from Canada. And so now they're sitting there like nobody's buying our stuff. Pod Culture says a distillery near me has closed down totally. And we're even going to talk about something in the game industry, the board game industry, a place that has shut down because they can't operate, and they were a big player. So we haven't seen this yet because these haven't gone into effect, but there are a lot of people, a lot of companies that have to make some very tough decisions now and possibly close up shop in case the July 8th comes through. Because already the China stuff, that's China is at 145%, which means if you buy $100 worth of raw materials, you have to pay $145 to the United States government to get those raw materials off the boat into you. So that $100 of raw materials now costs you $245. $100 goes to China, the only place you can get those raw materials and there are raw materials out there that literally you can only get from China. You can't get them anywhere else in the world because they don't exist. And then in order to bring them in, $145 you have to pay to the U.S. government. And if you do something like that, like let's say you're buying, I think I saw there's like a golf clubs that somebody was buying, and if they're under $800 right now, there actually is, like, if you're buying something and you're just buying $800 or less, like $799 or less, then you don't actually have to pay the import tariff. But if you, like, let's say buy golf clubs for $850, you are slapped with a $1,500 or something duty fee. It's an import duty fee. It's a separate line item. And suddenly your $800 golf clubs are now $2,000 when you add sales tax, all the taxes and stuff that you have to pay. We're getting there. And there's going to be a lot of companies that basically built their business around the global economy and utilizing the global economy that have to decide this month or next month, do I stay in business or do I take the risk that I'm going to have to go bankrupt? Because they can close down now and not be in financial ruin. If they stick around till July, they could be in financial ruin, and a lot of things could go wrong, and it might mess that owner up for decades. It might set them back financially decades, and it's definitely going to set their employees back, and there could be lawsuits because of unpaid stuff because he didn't have the money to pay it. There's a lot of stuff that can go down. Or you just close up shop now and you say, well, I guess I'm going to go get a real job. Fifth Dream says a Kickstarter I backed in like 2020 is now getting wrecked by terrorists because they manufacture in China just like everyone else. They promise they're going to fulfill, but we'll see if they even can. What a lot of Kickstarters will either do is that they will either refund, because believe it or not, sometimes just paying the Kickstarter penalty to refund everybody is cheaper than trying to fulfill orders if the only place you can get your manufacturing is China. Or they will try to get some other funding, or even do, some other like, hey, shipping charges the shipping is 145% of your pledge. They could theoretically do that. And then, selectively, whatever. But you got to realize that it's a lot more than just the cost of the good. I've talked about this before. Steve Jackson Games actually did something when these first were first announced. And I want to reiterate that, yes, if the thing, if you're bringing in, let's say, $1,000 worth of product, say a board game, and it's like a $15 board game. So the price from China at 145% means that you're paying $1,000 to the company in China, and then you're paying $1,450 to the U.S. government to bring it in. Now, the shipper actually charges you 1% of the cost of what you're doing. And the warehousing here charges another percent of the total thing. And the, you know, transport from the dock to you on a truck and, you know, whatever the pallets are, they get to you. They charge their percentage on the price plus the tariff. They don't say, oh, we'll charge you 1% of the $1,000. No, they say we're charging you 1% of the $2,450. So it's that tariff compounded. And so suddenly that $15 board game becomes a $40 board game. And as we have learned with Mario Kart World, we don't want to pay $80 for something we think should only be $60. And if you think that you would be okay paying $40 for a board game that used to be $15, you're not. That is not a good value. And E3VL says they can fulfill pre-orders only if they ship prior to tariff. It's actually when they get here. So that's the thing. It's not when they ship. It's when they arrive. So they could, even if they were shipped a month ago, if they don't arrive in port until now, that tariff is being applied because it is the cost to, you have to pay the U.S. government to get it off the boat, or they send them back. And they have been sending boats back with product that, that the company just can't afford to get off the boat. And yes, E3VL, so if they have it in stock already, then yes. Fifth Ream talking about that Kickstarter. Yeah, they're trying to get money from sales of extra stock they always have in the U.S., but it's still dicey. Unintended pun, but yes, it's still there. Questbuster says, I've read an account where one board game maker in the States is opting to try to warehouse their stuff in China and hope that things improve because they're going to get killed if their product ever gets gets on a boat and end up at the dock. So, yeah. Let's talk about a board game maker that is has gone a different route. You know, I know this is a video game podcast, but I like board games and I like tabletop stuff as well. But Polygon reports that renowned board game maker and publisher Greater Than Games has laid off staff and suspended operations, it announced Thursday, due to the impact of President Trump's 145% tariff rate on goods imported from China. The board game industry relies heavily on manufacturing from China. The tariffs have sent the tabletop industry into a major panic, and the impacts of the levies are already here. While Cephalofare Games has its Gloomhaven second edition stock effectively stuck overseas due to tariff rates, I wonder if that's the one that Questbuster was talking about, Greater Than Games owner Flat River Group announced in a news release that it's laid off its staff at the imprint and suspended all projects as, quote, as the global tariff situation remains volatile, unquote. So Greater Than Games, they are known for publishing Sentinels of the Multiverse, Spirit Island, and TAC, among many others. A representative for the company wrote that it's, quote, undergone a reduction in staff in response to ongoing economic pressures resulting from the international tariff crisis, unquote. But that the Greater Than Games website will stay up, quote, with in-stock products available to order, unquote. Games will still be produced as needed, and updates will be made at a later date for customers who ordered upcoming products, such as crowdfunding and pre-orders. Former Greater Than Games creative director Daryl Louder posted to Facebook on Thursday, announced his team had been disbanded, saying Flat River Group had shuttered Greater Than Games. Polygon reached out to both Louder and Greater Than Games for clarification, specifically to confirm how many people were laid off and to inquire about the status of projects that have already been crowdfunded or pre-ordered by players. While Greater Than Games may be one of the first high-profile makers to suspend operations due to Trump's tariffs, it's feared that many in the tabletop industry understand. Polygon spoke to nearly 20 organizations earlier in April, and I actually talked about this article, that said that they expect profits to be severely impacted by tariffs, that games in development may never come to market, and that jobs will be lost. Cephalofare Games founder Isaac Childress told Polygon on Wednesday, quote, "These tariffs are a doomsday scenario for the U.S. board game industry. It is just not economically feasible to bring board games into the U.S. at such tariff rates, which is already starting to dry up sales, causing an impact on retailers and distributors that I suspect will be much worse than COVID," unquote. Already, and I know that, you know, Target's problematic, so, like, I understand that, but already this past year, I have noticed that the board game section of my local Target basically has shrunk by half already, and I bet it's going to shrink even more. So, you know, there was a big boom with board games, especially 2021, 2022, a big boom with, you know, let's get, you know, all these board games are coming out. A lot of people, they've a lot of U.S. designers, a lot of indie. There was a big indie game revolution in board games and in card games. And, you know, so it's not just these big names, but, like, I knew people that, like, yeah, they designed a board game. And they're an independent person. They're one person. They designed a board game, and then China produced it, and they sold it. That's going to dry up here in the U.S. Now, other places, thankfully, there is a board game, a thriving board game industry, especially in Germany, and especially out there in Europe. There's a lot of that. So they're going to continue. And there's going to be a lot of great German-style board games, which is where, like, Settlers of Catan came from and things like that. So your German strategy board games are not going to have a problem. But it's the U.S. developers and the people that were like, I love board games. I want to create. I want to make board games. I want to design board games. I want to design puzzles. They're going to be the ones that are going to be like, well, I guess I can't in America because we're so free. Because we're freeing ourselves from the global economy. We don't want Americans to buy things that are part of the global economy. So the rest of the globe, they're going to do it. And we're going to hear about all these great board games in Germany and in England and things like that. And we're just not going to have access to them because why would you pay? Because some board games are $50. Why would you pay close to $125, $130 for a board game that everybody else in the world pays $50 for? And Questbush says, Greater Than Games have been in business for 10-plus years. Yeah, they're Sentinels of the Multiverse has been around for a while. And I think I have Spirit Island. I actually had Spirit of the Multiverse because they made a video game version, and I actually interviewed them here on this podcast probably 2010, 2011, because they have a Steam version of their card game. So they've been around for longer than 10 years. And I've even actually talked to the video game side of them. They were at a convention that I was covering, and I believe it's even still on our YouTube channel, and it's old. We're talking like 2010, 2011, something like that. S. Jordan Matt says the Hong Kong Post, which is their USPS, United States Postal Service, is stopping deliveries to the U.S. from Hong Kong as well. A lot of folks get their things imported from Hong Kong, so that may affect things. UPS, FedEx, and DHL are still operating out of there, though. So I want to say PlayAsia. If any of you have ever used PlayAsia to import Japanese arcade games, I know there's a lot of people in the audience here who probably imported Bimani games. I did, and I did it through PlayAsia. PlayAsia is out of Hong Kong. Now, once again, I think it's De Minimis, which is DEMINIS. The de minimis exception, which is, I believe, still in place today, but I believe they are closing this loophole, says that if you as an importer are importing less than $800, you are not having to pay a tariff. I believe that loophole is getting closed. I believe even if you import something that's $10, you will still be charged 145% of that $10 to actually get it. S. Jordan Matt says, PlayAsia uses EMS, which is a courier of Hong Kong Post, but UPS and FedEx are other courier options from there, but probably a little bit more expensive. I hope things get better. I really do. And I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know what more to do. Because there's a lot of people who think this is good. Like, if you can't, because a lot of people just assume if something is produced in China, it's being made with slave labor. It is not. Except there are exceptions, and there are very high-profile exceptions. But for the most part, no, they like their job as much as factory workers here in America like their job. It was a job. It paid them well for where they lived, or it pays them well for where they live. The majority of them are fine. It's just not here in America. We're going to take a quick music break. And then if you want to call in and give your perspective on any of this, you can join our Discord green room. Green room. Go to our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord, and join the Green Room voice chat channel, and we can chat for a little bit about this or anything else going on in the gaming industry, because, you know, games are still coming out, and games are being played, digital games and everything on the consoles we already have that are not subject to tariffs. So maybe we can talk about that and cheer us up a little bit. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show. You're in the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
This is Christopher Tin, composer of Baba Yetu, and you're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show.
It's Lord's Prayer in Swahili is what Baba Yetu is, so... said to play that one today. Hello. Welcome back to the Bobby Blackwell Show. Where we, and if you want to leave a bumper, you do not have to know Swahili. All you got to do is send me an MP3 with just your voice or a video with just your voice. I will choose which DMCA violation to put behind it, saying that you're coming back to the Bobby Blackwell Show. And maybe we'll have it on the air. So I'm not playing the same stuff over and over. Although it was great to talk to Christopher Tin. That was right after he won his Grammy. The first time a video game song had ever won a Grammy. He was very gracious enough to call into the show back when this was a radio show. And back when this wasn't even on, I don't even think it was on Vogue at the time when I did that. I think that was right before we created Voice Geeks Networks. That's how long ago it was. I'm going to probably talk about this game more because I did see HDI Andrew was saying and indie games. And there is as I've done some things with the Georgia Game Developer Association, which is our local game developer association, mostly indie game makers, although we do have a Ubisoft subsidiary here in the area. But it's mostly indie games, a lot of students who graduated from college and then made indie games. And there was a festival yesterday, and I did not actually take any recording equipment with me to the festival. I just went. But there is a game that I have been talking about and showing here, or not really showing, because there was never a release date for it. And but one that I've been, like, you know, talking about for, like, seen, and it's been in development for, like, 6 years. And at some point, I will probably be able to talk to the developer, the single developer who's doing this whole thing. However, I got the news yesterday when I was at this event with the Georgia Game Developers Association is that it's finally entering early access tomorrow. And this is a indie-developed fighting game, and it is called Elemental Rift. And it is a pixel-based... Smash Brothers like fighter with all, you know, all new characters, created characters by them, you know, unique storyline, arcade mode, tournament modes, things like that. Elemental Rift will be hitting early access. Will be hitting early access tomorrow on the 21st. After like 6 or 7 or 8 years in development, I don't know how long he's been working on it, but I've been talking to him a lot for the past couple of years. He's been showing at a whole bunch of conventions here in the Atlanta area, in DreamHack, MomoCon, at Siege, Southern Fried Gaming Expo. So if you've been to any convention here in Atlanta, you have probably seen this game, but it is finally going to be ready. The controls are really tight for the fighting game mechanics. But it is still early access. There's still more to do with it, but it's called Elemental Rift. It's going to be on Steam and itch.io. It's going to be finally available tomorrow as I'm recording this. So you can probably compare it to a whole bunch of other games that have been out. But it's another one of those. It's one dude in his spare time. He's, you know, got a real job that takes up a lot of time. This has been a labor of love for a long time, and so I am really proud of Ninrak which is what he goes by. I'm really proud of Ninrak for finally taking the plunge, and I have been telling him for years, I'm like, you need to finish it. And remember what I was talking about last week about scope creep when we were talking about, like, how could Mario Kart World, instead of being $80, could have been $60? And I said maybe they didn't need to do so much. That was what was going on with this game, and he got it together. He finally said no more. No more feature creep. No more scope creep. I need to get this out. And I'm very proud of him for that. He's not here tonight. I think he works on Sunday night, so it's going to be a while before I can bring him on the show. But I'm really proud of him. It took a lot of courage to finally say, I need to just get this out, and not everything should be in it. Because I believe if Nintendo had said that with Mario Kart World and just gave us a prettier Mario Kart without 74 characters and without a whole free roam and without all the atmospheric stuff and all the stuff, and just gave us Mario Kart, it wouldn't be an $80 title. Because I believe the reason it's $80 is because it costs so much to make because of how much time it took them to put in everything. So kudos to them. So look up Elemental Rift. And it is going to be on Steam. The Steam page is not available tonight, but by the time you hear this on the podcast, the Steam page should be up so you can wishlist it. It's going into early access. It will also be on itch.io. So give it a shot. Take a look at it, or at least take a look at it. Coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork, Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California, talking about games for much, much longer than I do, and we like to check in with them to see what's going on there, and we're waiting for Discord to connect us. Sacramento, are you there?
I am here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well. How is your voice?
It's hanging in there. I was hosting a show here live last night, which was great. Mm-hmm. We had a very, very famous, probably the world's most well-known drag king, Landon Sider, who won a show called the Boulay Brothers Dragula, was here last night. So I was hosting a show with him as the headliner, and a lot of great acts, but it does take me, so basically it's very different from what I do here on OLR. I go up on stage kind of in between acts, and I'm buying time as they do the set changes. So I will riff on current events and things of that sort. But it's funny how, like, the ability to talk on bullet points that I've developed from doing this show for years and years with Matt and Jamie, it's very funny how those skills have been very portable to being able to riff on bullet points on stage. So,
Yeah, we it's like we did a panel at Dragon Con all about the type of stuff that we learned from doing this, because even when I'm doing other events and hosting other events, I have to stall for time. And being able, and learning how to play off the crowd, which, like, I know we don't have a crowd we're looking at, but I'm looking at chat. So I'm playing off of chat. Like, there is still a little bit of that, because I'm seeing what they're arguing about and trying to see if I can work it in to what I'm talking about and not have it be too jarring. It's a fun skill, and it's there's not that many ways to work on this skill if it's something you're interested in, so that's why I'm glad for this hobby here.
Yeah, so. Just got to practice. Get in there and do it.
So, what are your thoughts on the price hikes for the accessories? I mean, at least it's all the optional stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, at least it's the optional stuff, and I mean, me personally, they were not things that were really on my radar anyway. I, maybe the Pro Controller might have been something I would have been interested in, but I'm pretty much standing by I'm not paying anything that's going to give this country money that it quite frankly doesn't deserve with these various tariffs and things. So I don't see myself getting the Pro Controller until the price comes back down. I really hope this doesn't end up being Nintendo trying to normalize that price. I'm saying this just with skepticism, I suppose, is that I do hope that Nintendo will be in good faith lower that price once again, once this tariff situation is flip-flopped on once again, when certain people in you-know-whose orbit convince him to come to his senses, as often has been happening in these scenarios, but not often enough this time.
And I would think this is the optimism in me. This is the optimistic person in me, which many people may not agree with. I think because this is the way they raise the prices, they made it very specifically stated it's because of the tariffs that we are raising these prices. It could be easier for them to then walk them back, because it's not like they went out of the gate saying a Pro Controller is $85. They came out of the gate saying it's $80 and saying, oh, because of this, it's $85 now. which means then they can say, okay, well, now it doesn't need to be 85 anymore. It can be 80 again. And it kind of gives them a possible out in the future. Whether they'll take it or not, I don't know. The optimist in me thinks that that door is open just because of the timing of all of this.
That is my hope, you know, but there's that part of me that can't help but feel like, I wonder if they just keep the price there even when the tariffs are gone. But I really would like to also think that's not the case. I think people aren't really going to wake up, at least the gamers who can influence a lot on online sometimes. Mm-hmm. Until the gamers are having to pay twice as much for a PlayStation 5, which I think you outlined earlier, that's certainly within the realm of possibility for the holiday when people are going to really start raising their voice on this. So, but it definitely makes wanting to get a Switch 2 in that first wave even more desirable for me. So I'm glad at least we kind of know what to do with pre-orders now. I just hope it works.
No Amazon, though. Can't pre-order through Amazon. No,
they've been out of the loop on Nintendo direct for a little bit now. So, and I don't know, like maybe that's a good thing because I feel like those things will get stolen off of porches and stuff. And it just, you know, I mean, I know they have secure delivery means and things like that. Maybe they should force people to use them for those types of things. But I would like to walk into a store and pick one up with my hands and all that good stuff. No, I want them leaving one on my porch.
I'm planning the Best Buy because they're doing a midnight launch at my local Best Buy, which is a Best Buy I have spent many a midnight at. It's the exact same Best Buy that I did the Xbox 360 launch at. And I actually went there as press because this was, 2006 was the Xbox 360 launch. And podcasts were press at the time because they were so new. So it was like me and then like our local paper, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, one of our TV crews, news, and our rock radio station. We were the four members of the press that were there for the midnight launch. So it was kind of like I was kind of holed up with them. So it was like, I'm like, I don't belong here. I had imposter syndrome, but they were all really cool about it and stuff. And, you know, they were asking me because podcast was so new.
Yeah, they're all traditional media. About what you were doing.
That was back when podcast was new media. Remember? Mm-hmm. Remember
before
that term?
Celebrities ruined it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. NPR hadn't started their podcast just yet. I think they started their podcast like a couple months later, but still. But it was, it's literally that same Best Buy. And so I have spent many a midnight outside that Best Buy, and I'm going to spend one more. Hopefully.
Nice.
Hopefully. And thankfully, it is Thursday. I was worried it was going to be next week.
Just want to do the pre-order and hope I can just waltz in there on my lunch break the next day. I don't think I'll do the midnight rush thing, but I'll pick one up at lunch the next day.
Yeah. So I'm still planning on getting it as well. And, you know, we'll see what other things I get in terms of the accessories. It might make the accessories easier for me to get, like, because I probably will still get the Pro Controller, but, you know, probably not any of the other stuff.
I think the other thing that convinces me not to do the Pro Controller is that I do have a Switch 1. Actually, it's sitting right here. I do have a Switch 1 Pro Controller, Splatoon branded. So I just plan, you know, and you can use them on the Switch 2. You're missing, obviously, the unique features. But considering, I think, I don't know what Switch 2 games I'm going to be getting out the gate outside of Mario Kart. I think it's more of upgrades to the last gen and then Metroid Prime 4 eventually when that's released. So I we'll see. We'll see. But then I also kind of feel like with the Switch 2 and that mouse control thing that I've been raving about, that's probably going to be my preferred way to try Metroid Prime. Yeah. Although I'm hearing it's kind of a mixed bag right now. We'll see.
All right. So what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
Well, outside of the Switch 2, let's talk about these rumors. I mean, these I don't know at what point you say it's not rumors. This is just like fact awaiting to be confirmed. But we know that an Elder Scrolls Oblivion remake is coming. It's happening. So it's just a matter of Xbox, Microsoft confirming it at this point. So we'll see that. And one retailer in the realm of Switch 2 is asking, how do we stop scalpers? Can we do it? We'll talk a little bit more about that plea coming out of another country as we dive into that. So all that much more coming up on OLR next.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in two weeks.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So like I said, that is it for me. I will be back in 2 weeks. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly. Orange Lounge Radio will also be here next week, though, so you can still be here at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific next week and still get your gaming fix. So you can find me on our Discord server, VogNetwork.com/Discord, and you can find me on Blue Sky at BobbyBlackWolf.com. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make this live show work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. We had a hype train earlier tonight. Thank you so much for that. And so thank you, Mike Deft, resubscribed, saying happy 420. Yes, thank you. Happy 420 to you. Orange Wright, resubscribed. Rob Roberts resubscribed, saying, I think I just missed the hype train. No, you didn't miss it, because Pod Culture gifted a sub to OMG Flea. And that triggered the hype train, which caused SSJ and Matt to cheer 200 bits. Sean322 resubscribed and cheered 200 bits with hype. Orange Wright cheered 100 bits. SSJ Runner Matt resubscribed. Dark Sakura resubscribed and also gifted a sub to Dolly Partner. Welcome, Dolly. Thank you so much for checking us out, and thank you for the follow. Orange Lounge Radio is coming up next with Rob, Jamie, and Matt. I hope you look forward to it. I'll see you in 2 weeks. I'm going to hit this button so I can get out of here. And please take care of yourself. Please take care of others around you. And try to enjoy a video game sometime this week. See you next week. Or 2 weeks. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Black Wolf Studios.